Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Autism is a condition that can affect how a person communicates with and relates to people around them. Many issues can arise in a dental surgery when treating an autistic patient, in part due to huge sensory overload that dental treatment presents. The Irish Dental Association are holding their annual conference this weekend, and Dr. Gillian Smith and Dr. Jennifer Collins will deliver a presentation on the best practices when it comes to treating patients with additional needs. Gillian and Jennifer join me now. Good morning to both of you. Ladies. Gillian, can I start with you? When did you first become interested in this area of practice?
I guess the interest started even in my student days in working with people with additional needs. It was always something I wanted to do as I went through my working life as a dentist. And now I have a practice that is limited really to the treatment of people with additional needs and those who require sedation. So that would be nervous dental patients.
So talk me through how different your practice is to a normal dental surgery and how differently you do things. I mean, for a start, the physical layout, all of those bright lights that we associate with dental surgeons, is that something that you minimise?
Yeah, I mean, the reason dentists have bright lights is because you're trying to see into a little dark space. We try to balance what we need to do as a dentist to provide treatment with making accommodations for patients with additional needs in whatever way we can. And in some ways, those are simple adjustments, but of course, we also add in sedation where it's required. You know, sometimes the amendments or adjustments that you need to make are straightforward. Sometimes they're not quite so straightforward.
How much more time do you have to spend with a patient than with if you were treating me, for instance? Is it about the time put in beforehand before you go anywhere near their mouths?
Yeah, and you've hit the nail on the head. That's really the issue. A lot of it is in the preparation before you even come into the dental chair. For lots of patients that I see, the time is actually shorter because they would find it difficult to tolerate a long session in a dental surgery. So you might be breaking the treatment up into lots of small, short visits rather than one long visit. Or if it works better in the other way, you might do some sedation and take a long session and try and get as much done in one go. So you're really tailoring the treatment and what that person needs depending on their own individual needs and demands.
I would imagine then as well, this is a good point to bring you in, Jennifer, that consultation with parents or with carers before you ever arrive anywhere near the surgery is key. Was that the case with you? Because you have a son with additional needs, is it?
Yes, that's right. So I have a son, James, who is 8 and the light of my life. So I've always had great empathy and compassion for autistic people in the past. And then all of a sudden, when I found myself to have a child with autism, it gave me a very different perspective. So I now would manage the autistic patient differently as a result of what I know as a mother to a child with autism.
And how did the prospect of having somebody rummaging around in his mouth strike James when you first explained to him the need for it?
Well, it didn't go down well, as you can imagine. So I had spent weeks and weeks and months running around my house with plastic mirrors and gloves and trying to acclimatise him to the experience of a dentist. But, you know, it's difficult for children with autism. And for us as dentists, we have to have great empathy for them and also for their parents and carers who, you know, might find it very emotional and very, you know, understandably find it difficult to watch their child possibly be in distress in a dental surgery. But now I know more, you know, knowledge is power. Now I know a lot more and now I manage the autistic patient very differently. I'm much more accommodating as a result and I understand the emotions that the patient and the family feels. And I also understand more about the neurodiverse person. So like for me as a dentist, now I know that the dental surgery is set up for a neurotypical patient, say. And now I realise with the neurodiverse patient, I don't need him or her to conform for me. I will adapt the dental surgery for them. So if they need to stim or twirl or squeal, whatever it might be that they need to do to regulate, I leave them at it. I might be doing the dental examination on the floor, on the windowsill, but at least I'm helping the child acclimatise. I'm having a look at their teeth. I'm hopefully discussing diet and brushing techniques and setting them up for a lifetime of positive dental experiences.
Do you know what's in coming out in between the lines of what you're both saying here is that you're doing an awful lot of learning on the job. Is this not something that's basically a part of the curriculum, Jennifer, in dental school?
It actually isn't. We're not taught special care dentistry in dental school. However, it's a skill that we learn over time. And that's part of what Gillian and I are doing with this presentation is we aim to empower, educate and enable dentists to manage the autistic patient more effectively in the dental surgery. So, you know, we aim to give them the tools and strategies they need to hopefully manage the autistic patient throughout their life then and make the whole dental experience more autism friendly.
How often do you end up having to use sedation, Gillian?
It's an interesting question. Really, autism is a spectrum, so you're going to have a very wide range of abilities with an ability to tolerate dental treatment. I would use sedation, I guess, because I'm a referral service for dentists. I would use sedation probably more than the average dentist would need to use sedation. It's great to have it as a as an adjunct to care, but we only use it when it's necessary.
Is there an ethical question attached to using it, though, on somebody who can't give informed consent about what is involved in being knocked out? Or is this ultimately in their best interests that their dental hygiene is maintained?
Yeah, I mean, consent comes into it. We are working with the new developments in this area. The Informed Decision Making Act is something that, you know, that is coming to the fore and certainly will be very much of relevance to me and my practice, where some of my patients may struggle to give their informed consent. And we'll work with the developments in that area as best we can. But you have a duty of care as a dentist to make sure that somebody isn't in pain or suffering with infection.
Jennifer, that's a really thorny one. How would you even begin to explain to James, I'm going to take you to the dentist and we're going to knock you out, but it's for your own good?
Yeah, that was a tough one, you know, and I guess for my son, there was a lot of the devil was in the detail. You know, I had to go through it with him in detail in advance. And I knew he wasn't too happy about the situation, but he knew it was for in his own best interest. But when my son had to have dentistry last year, he had to be put to sleep for his dentistry because I knew he wouldn't manage to have it done in a normal dental setting, so to speak. So we had to go into the private sector to get those services for him because they weren't available for him through the HSE. So thankfully, I have a lot of connections being a dentist and thankfully I have the resources to afford for him to get the necessary services. But it's still, the costs were high with that. It's still running into the thousands. But and a lot of families can't stretch to that. But,
okay, so is that because you need an anesthesiologist present for the duration?
Correct. Yes. Right. Yeah. And because the HSE wouldn't see autism as a medical condition, he wasn't able to get his dentistry done through the HSE, but thankfully we were able to get an excellent service in the private sector.
Cool. Gillian, is that a dilemma that arises for an awful lot of people, that classification of autism?
I mean, if you're talking about that difficulty accessing care, that's something that I face every day in my practice. You know, I'm working within the private sector and I really enjoy working in this field and I find it very fulfilling. But in an ideal world, I would be the private sector that people elect to use if they wish to opt out of the public sector. But unfortunately, people really struggle to access care for their children or family members with autism. Mm. I'm talking children and adults. And so they are having to, you know, find the resources themselves to access care privately.
And what sort of costs are we talking about being involved here? I mean, once you bring an anesthesiologist into the equation for an extraction, what are we talking about?
Well, once you are talking about admitting somebody to hospital for general anesthesia, you know, if you are lucky enough to have health insurance, that may contribute to the cost, but you are talking about thousands. When you're talking about conscious sedation, which is what I do in a primary care setting, you're probably not talking in the thousands, you're talking more in the hundreds, depending on the treatment that you're...
I know, but when you consider how frequently young children require extractions, I mean, God, one of mine had five extracted. If that was five separate hospital visits under general anaesthetic, you're talking tens of thousands.
Yeah, and, you know, access to dental care and, you know, elimination of infection and pain should be a basic human right. We as a state should be looking after the most vulnerable in our society. And this isn't something that people should be struggling to find access to. But unfortunately, that is the current state of play. And it's something we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis where people are struggling to find access for their family members.
You're giving a talk to your colleagues. What are you hoping that they pick up on that talk from you?
Our talk is about small changes that dentists and dental teams can make within their practice to improve the accessibility for people with autism. So to make their dental practices more autism friendly, for want of a better expression. And really what we would like is that people with autism can access dental treatment or even just a simple examination in their own communities, you know, that they don't have to travel to access care.
Jennifer?
Yes, exactly. So exactly as Jill said, so we wish to, you know, inform our dentists who will be in attendance a little bit more, you know, inform them about autism and the difficulties that the autistic person may have in the dental surgery and how we can overcome them. So, you know, we want to give dentists the tools and strategies they need to hopefully manage the autistic patient more effectively. And, you know, it's an exciting time for dentistry. We've become a lot more inclusive and, you know, we want to be part of the solution. We're a progressive profession and we want to be part of the change. And we want all our patients to be able to access dentistry when they need it in a private or public setting at the appropriate time in their lives.
Hi, Philip. As a parent of two autistic kids, the dentist doing their homework before the child arrives and not waiting until they arrive is key. Thanks, says Kira, something that you had already actually underlined. Claire texts us on 51551. I'm such a nervous person when it comes to the dentist. I can only go to a dentist who provides sedation. I'm in my 50s. I'm terrified of the dentist. Some dentists in the past refused to treat me as I'm so nervous. That's, I suppose, speaks to exactly what you're talking about. Are there dentists who just say, I'm sorry, I'm just not set up to deal with people with additional needs?
Yeah, I think just like Jennifer said, you know, we're a very progressive profession. We're trying to make sure that we can look after all sectors of the community. And I think our colleagues out there who aren't set up to look after people with additional needs will know to reach out to those of us that are. You know, there's certain dental treatments that I wouldn't take on. I don't do root canal and molar teeth. I refer out to my colleagues who are experts in that area. And equally, I'm happy to accept referrals from colleagues who want to refer on people with additional needs. So I think, like in every area of healthcare, you play to your strengths.
Indeed. Okay. Dr. Jennifer Collins and Dr. Gillian Smith, thank you both very much for joining us this morning. Coming up next, Eurovision.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.